Be more people joining, but we'll go ahead and get started. Not everyone needs to hear all of my comments, but if you're on every month, it's some of the same, but I want to repeat it because there are always new people. So welcome everyone to another meeting of First Friday Breakfast Club. I'm Byron Huff, First Friday Breakfast Club president. My pronouns are he, him, his. We are an association of gay, bi, and trans men. FFBC was formed in 1996 and is a 501c3 entity, making your contributions tax deductible. We would like everyone to mute your microphone also, and this meeting is recorded. Since the formation of FFBC, we've raised more than $400,000 for scholarships that are awarded annually to high school seniors who have done significant things to reduce homophobia and educate about LGBTQ issues in their schools and communities. $3,000 scholarships are awarded regardless of gender identity, sexual orientation, or other protected characteristics. The real strength of the scholarship program, aside from recognizing and rewarding significant and often courageous acts of the recipients, is that it purchases the tickets for FFBC to send a representative to the high school graduation ceremony throughout Iowa, often in front of an audience that thinks they have never seen a real live gay person. Now, after the obviously that was put on hold in 2020, but, and who knows, 2021 probably as well, it'll be more virtual, but the in-person event is amazing and really opened some eyes in Iowa that is still needed. I'm reminded of the importance of FFBC and other organizations, including Iowa Safe Schools. It was reported yesterday that LGBTQ students were harassed in the parking lot of Southeast Polk Community Schools. And it was very frightening, especially, I can't imagine what those kids are going through. So that's why we exist, and that's why we're here. We do these meetings to educate and bring speakers that we think of will be of interest to our community and our allies. While donations are always welcome, we make it a more formal request this time of year because your donations will fund scholarships awarded this coming June. You can have one-time or recurring donation on our website, ffbciowa.org. The technology that allows more payment options is thanks to the generosity of Brad Holland, Joe Race, and Ascenta Wealth Group. If you have not donated this year, I hope you will. On our website, you'll find access links to resources, archived monthly newsletters, audio recordings, and past speakers. Thank you, David Cotton and Nicholas Williams and Wade Peterson for the many updates to our website recently, including color newsletters back to 2005. There it is. I put it in my notes so I'd remember. It's all the newsletters are there, and it's some great reading. Past speakers with recordings and so much more. So again, ffbciowa.org.com. You'll get another organization. Thanks to David Cotton and Nicholas Williams for hosting our Zoom meeting until the day comes when we can meet in person. We all prefer in-person meetings, and someday we'll be able to do those again when it's safe for everyone. In the meantime, we're taking advantage of the virtual meetings by engaging speakers from locations outside of Iowa. The virtual meeting format also allows others to join who may not be able to attend in person. We hope to even offer a virtual option after we resume in-person meetings. That's technology we believe Hoyt Sherman will be able to assist us with. Keep in mind that you can share and forward the meeting invitation to others. They may appreciate the opportunity to hear one of our amazing speakers. I don't have any announcements this morning. Please, if you know of any, forward those to info@ffbciowa.org, and we'll include them during our meetings. The newsletter was distributed electronically March 1st to everyone on FFBC's email list. You can see that newsletter on our website, ffbciowa.org, but also provide your email to info@ffbciowa.org. If you would like to receive our newsletters, meeting invitations, and other communications. That was the first time we have electronically distributed our newsletter. And as far as I can tell, it has gone very well. Your feedback is absolutely welcome. We believe we're moving forward to the technology that so many organizations have already done, and not having a mailed newsletter. While people like to have that, you have the ability to print it. The next copy deadline for the newsletter is the second Monday prior to the breakfast meeting. So the next deadline would be March 22nd. If you have something that you'd like to share, send a copy to info@ffbciowa.org for inclusion in the newsletter. Our next virtual board of directors meeting will be on Monday, March 8th at 6:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Please let me know if you'd like to participate, and I will get you the Zoom meeting information. And you can post comments or unmute your mic to avoid talking over each other. I'll try to call on people to raise your hand, and I'll ask our Vice President Ryan, if he's on the call, I haven't seen him this morning, to assist. And now David Cotton will introduce our speaker this morning, Ginger Campbell.
Good morning. Glad to introduce today Dr. Virginia Campbell, physician, podcaster, and author, all three. She is best known for her popular podcast, Brain Science, which explores how recent discoveries in neuroscience are unraveling the mystery of how our brain manages us humans, makes us human. Brain Science launched in 2006 and enjoys a worldwide audience. It consistently ranks as one of the most highly regarded science podcasts and has over 11 million downloads. She's also the author of Are You Sure? The Unconscious Origins of Certainty. And where I know her best is from her hosting Graying Rainbows, coming out LGBT plus later in life, which she launched in 2018, and which Iowa's own Dr. Lauren Olson was the second and sixth guests of the podcast. Her personal coming out journey began at age 60 after the unexpected death of her husband of 38 years. Dr. Campbell's professional journey has been adventurous. She spent over 20 years working as an emergency physician, mostly in rural Alabama, before embarking on a fellowship in palliative medicine. She now practices palliative medicine at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Birmingham, Alabama. And as a veteran myself, I thank her for her service of those that have served the country. She's also the assistant professor at the University of Alabama School of Medicine. She lives in Birmingham, Alabama with her golden retriever, Rusty. Without further ado, welcome Dr. Campbell.
Thank you. I really appreciate the invitation to talk with you today. I'm going to start out by giving you a link, if I can hit the right button on my computer. Last week, I was on a podcast that I highly recommend, This Week in Virology, which is a great podcast for accurate science information about COVID. So if you've been looking for a reliable source, that's it. I was going to talk about a little bit about my story, but what I really want to talk about today is my podcast, Graying Rainbows, what it's about, and more importantly, how you can help, because I think that you might wonder, well, what's this got to do with us? So that will be the final goal to answer that question. Feel free to raise your hand in your virtual way if you have any questions along the way, and I'll be ready to answer questions also at the end. I'm going to start out by just sharing a little bit more about my story. David mentioned that my official coming out story began when my husband died a few months before I turned 60. But I'm going to back up just a little bit because you might be wondering, well, why did it take so long? I was born in 1955, and I noticed from looking at the pictures of everybody that a lot of you are my age or older. So I think that you will appreciate what that means in terms of what the world was like. I grew up as a little girl, as a, you know, pretty strong tomboy. I loved sports. And as you may remember, there was a big stigma against girls in sports back in our youth. I remember reading novels like that. There was a series of sports novels for girls called, and one of them was named, there wasn't much stuff for girls, but there was this thing called, I read a book called My Sister Mike. All these books ended the same way. The girl would be really into sports and she would be saved by getting a boyfriend. And then, of course, she would not be interested in sports anymore. I did not appreciate the subtext at the time. My first exposure to homosexuality happened when I was about 15 and I was playing basketball. And someone said to me, the coach and the girls on that team are queer. This was about 1971. And I was like, what's the big deal? They can't get you pregnant. I mean, I figured worrying about being raped was a bigger concern than worrying about whether a woman was homosexual. But, you know, what did I know? Anyway, I got married when I was only 21. So I had a, you know, pretty sheltered youth. And my husband was my best friend. And when I was about 24, in 1980, I was about to start medical school. And I had a very brief, maybe a month, affair with another woman. And that was what opened my eyes to, hey, you know, maybe there are other possibilities. Now, this is 1980 when people still thought, you know, that being gay was a choice to a certain extent, right? So I realized, gosh, I have a lot to lose. 1980, Alabama, you don't want to be gay in Alabama in 1980, or probably any place else in the United States. And so I just decided, no, I'll stay married. And that's what I did. In fact, I didn't even think of myself as maybe gay, like a lot of people. I just was like, I'm straight. That's it. Okay. And even though in the 80s, I was playing on a competitive softball team with a bunch of lesbians, I didn't see myself as possibly gay. I saw myself as being discriminated against for being straight because the women on the team were scared of being outed. So maybe in the 90s, you know, about that time when when you've been married a while, you start having your struggles, and we had our struggles. I started to think, well, you know, maybe I'm bisexual, but I never acted on it. And my husband didn't take it seriously, even when I talked to him about it. And we decided, well, we'll stay together because, you know, we are best friends, and we both agreed that that was more important than, you know, some problems we might have in terms of sex in our relationship. And so that's how things stood until he died. About 3 weeks after I finished my fellowship, he died unexpectedly. And about a few months later, almost 6 months later, I turned 60, and I'm like, I don't think I want to spend the rest of my life alone. I don't think I want another man. Yeah, I'm gay. To be honest with you, I still prefer the term gay to lesbian, even though, you know, these days you guys get to keep gay and we're supposed to have lesbian, but you know, out in the straight world, they still think we're all gay, right? Okay, so that's my little story. It's not very interesting, I don't think, but it just gives you some background. So it's 2015 when I'm coming out and I'm trying to figure out how to, you know, connect and meet people. So around 2016, I got the idea that I would start a podcast for other people coming out later in life. Didn't have a name yet. Then you know what happened in 2016. So I kind of chickened out, to be perfectly honest. And so I didn't actually launch Graying Rainbows until 2018. And funny story, Graying Rainbows was going to be called, and I didn't even know about Lauren's book. It was going to be called, it wasn't Finally Out, because that's the name of his book, but something similar to that. I've already forgotten what the name was. Anyway, it went to a porn site. So I realized I needed a better name. And so that's why I came up with Graying Rainbows, which I think captures the idea that it's for people who are more mature. But you would be surprised at the youth that listens to my show. In fact, I actually had to make, when I had a group on Facebook, I actually had to make a rule that you had to be at least 30, which was kind of funny. So I want to just, you might say, well, why a podcast? Because especially those of you who are older, you may not even listen to podcasts. I don't know. They're getting more widespread. But I've been in podcasting since 2006. And so I am a big believer in its power as a way of connecting and sharing ideas with people. So for me, the idea of doing a podcast was almost as natural as another person might say, hey, I'm going to write a book. And so when I started, when I finally decided to start, I was like, okay, yeah, he's president, but if I'm not going to speak up, I mean, during the Lavender Scare in the 50s, one of the reasons why people were so vulnerable was because they were invisible and you couldn't speak up. In fact, you know, what they did when people were outed in the 50s, usually it was involving losing federal jobs because of the executive order Eisenhower had that basically said, if you were gay, you could not work for the federal government. If you got caught, you know, usually it would be like at a gay bar or something. If you got caught, the way that they tried to, you know, strong arm you was to get you to out your friends, you know, because everybody was in the closet. And they would, you know, if you'll give us names of other people, things will go better for you, which of course was totally a lie, but that's what they did. So I'm thinking now, we don't want to be silent. I mean, the thing that should be different now, even if Trump was still in office and started to do even worse things, we should speak up. We should not be silent like people had to be back in the 50s. So that's kind of my philosophy of graying rainbows. But I have three goals for the show. One is that I think that people, when coming out later in life, have different challenges than people who do it when they're young. And this is not generally recognized. So that is one reason for the show. I also want to provide resources for people. For example, David is going to give me a list of all the books he read, and I'm going to put them in a place where people who listen to his interview can then go and get the same resources that he found helpful. I also talk about LGBTQ history. I've had Lillian Federman, who's a very well-known historian on there, and twice, and last time she came on, she talked about her very recent book about Harvey Milk, which I highly recommend if you haven't read. So that actually attracts younger listeners who are interested in LGBT history. But then I discovered from audience feedback that the biggest impact of the show comes from hearing people's stories. And that's the reason why the show has transitioned from getting, you know, sort of like expert guests to having more just everyday people like me and David. And the biggest impact is that it makes people feel less alone, which I'm sure that you experience as you have your first Friday lunch, that one of the advantages of getting together is ending isolation. So that's kind of the overview. So now what I'd like to do is ask, is there any questions before I move on?
Yes, I have a question.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Oftentimes people who are coming out at an older age have children and sometimes grandchildren. Could you speak to the complications or the nuances of coming out at an older age when there are adult children in the picture?
Absolutely. In fact, that's actually where I'm heading now, which is I'm going to talk about what's unique about coming out later in life. And obviously the first thing that would come to your mind is the people in your life are different. If you come out, you know, as an adolescent or young adult, your biggest concerns are generally your parents, your siblings, and maybe some of your friends. And that, of course, is intimidating and scary enough. But if you're married, and especially if you have children, then you have it's a whole another level. And when it comes to the children, I don't have children. So what I'm saying comes from what I've learned from listening to the many people that I've had the privilege to talk to. Obviously it depends on the age of the children. If the children are adult, the challenge, my impression is, if the children are adult, the challenge is mainly in the head of the person, right? Because young adults today, unless you're in a, you know, very conservative religion, most young adults today are pretty accepting. You know, they've grown up with the idea that being gay is, you know, so usually if you have an adult child today and you tell them, they're not as excited as you expect them to be, you know, so it turns out that that's not, but it's a big mental obstacle. Now, if the kids are younger, the biggest issue is if you're going to be breaking up with your spouse. It turns out that the children are much more affected by divorce than they are by finding out that their parent is LGBT. Okay. So, that brings it back to the, how do you handle the spouse, which is actually for most people, the most challenging, you know, part. And that, you know, because of the people have guilt, they have to figure out whether they try to stay in their marriage. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. You have a spouse who has health issues. I've gotten emails from people who are in marriages where, you know, leaving is not an option because their spouse is elderly and sick and, you know, they have to stay together. So older you are, the more, you know, you might say there's that, you know, various responsibilities that you can't just leave, you know? So I think the issue of guilt, from what I've heard from people talking, has been one that a lot of people really struggle with. That now, not that younger people don't have issues of guilt, but I think that for them, it's mostly about if they're coming from a situation where they've been told being gay is bad and they feel guilty about that, but they don't have to feel guilty about, you know, well, they probably still have a little bit of guilt, you know, but it's not as much, if you know what I mean. Another issue that's really important to a lot of older people and younger people, but in a different way, is faith issues. Okay. Because, in the United States, for most part, it's still true that people go to church for community. And so if you've been in a church for many, many years, and you're worried that you're going to lose all of your friends, it might literally seem to be all of your friends, right? So that's a big deal. And then there's the whole issue of, if the person's been struggling with their identity for many, many years and having guilt about that. I've interviewed people who came very close to committing suicide and had many issues with depression. I've had some really fantastic interviews with people who came from Mormonism and Orthodox Judaism. I mean, their stories are incredible, what they have done to be able to be true to themselves. Of course, it's not quite as bad as it used to be, because some religions are becoming more accepting than others. But still, I think for most people, if faith is a part of their life, that can be a big part of the challenge. And sometimes people have to leave their communities. The woman I interviewed who was an Orthodox Jew was literally going to Princeton, the college Princeton. She had five kids at home. She would drive to Princeton, change into normal people clothes, go to class, then go back home and put her, you know, Jewish clothes on. She was doing that because she didn't want to leave her husband until she'd be able to support herself, because she didn't want to lose her kids. So these things are just much more complicated. And then there are issues about self-identity that I think are a little bit different the older you get. Because, you know, when you're an adolescent, you are by definition trying to figure out who you are. But if you're a mature adult, you're supposed to have figured out who you are. But you might have been sort of pushing down a piece of you, or maybe it's totally new. And this is something that I think it's really important to know, especially for any of you listening who may have been out your entire adult lives, is that it's not necessarily true that a person coming out later in life has always known they were gay and was just in self-denial. That is not necessarily true. The older the person is, the more likely it is that they actually really, truly didn't know. And I used to have this myth in my mind that this was only true for women and not true for men. Because I assumed you guys are so horny that you would have figured it out, right? But women, you know, we are a little different. So, I mean, a lot of women don't figure it out until later, but it turns out that that's really true for men too. So don't assume if you meet somebody who comes out late that they've just been in some kind of denial state all these years, because that may be true, but it may not be true. Sorry, I actually do have notes. I know you probably can't tell, but any more questions? Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about how changing attitudes have affected people as people are getting older. Because, oh, thanks, David. I see you posted Alana's interview. According to what age you are, coming out is going to be a different process, and that's one of the reasons why I think it's hard for people who are coming out now later in life when they look at the resources for young people, because these resources do not take into account the circumstances that many of us grew up under and some of the key events that happened that changed people's attitudes. And I was just thinking about some of these events and thinking about how they affect, you know, what age you are. So let's think back. I'll go back as far as 1952. Was anybody here awake in 1952? I mean, okay. So 1952, I was not born yet. I was born in 1955, but 1952, and I don't remember what year Eisenhower made his thing about banning federal employees. It might've been in 51, but 1952 is the year that the American Psychiatric Association made homosexuality officially a disease in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, okay? The irony of that is that same year, Evelyn Hooker did her famous to us, study that showed that if you blinded the psychiatrist, they couldn't tell the difference between gay men and straight men on their, you know, ink blot tests and those kinds of tests they did back those days. So she basically was providing evidence that there was nothing sick about homosexual men at the same time that they were making it official that it was a disease. Okay, so if you were a young adult in the 1950s or even the 1960s, you grew up with the idea that being homosexual is an illness. Okay. And then also in the 1950s was the Lavender Scare, which was when all homosexuals were banned from federal employment. And, you know, there was a big purge. So it was a bad time, you know, to be gay. So if you had come of age during that period, even if you, you know, might have even had, maybe you would have been a person who would have maybe thought about it, but just it wasn't even on the table as a thing you would do. Like, especially, like, say you wanted to be in the military, you would know, hey, no, I can't go down that road. Or you wanted to be a politician, or you wanted to be a teacher. Anything you wanted to be just about, you would have been blocked from if you came out. So if you were a young person coming of age in that time, I imagine that you would have probably a lot of people would have suppressed any thoughts. And then maybe later on, you're now, you'll see if you're a young person in the 50s, let's see, then you would be in your 80s now. And there are actually people in their 80s that are coming out in their 80s, but nobody seems to realize that. And then as we move forward, you know, in the 60s, if you came of age in the 60s, well, there was the beginning of gay rights, but still, it was pretty still not okay. In 1973 was the year that the American Psychiatric Association finally took it out of the DSM, but that didn't mean that everybody suddenly believed that it was okay, right? So in the 70s, people still, you know, thought that, I mean, queer was a prerogative in the 70s. And so I came of age in the early 70s, you know, it was not, first of all, it was mostly something people didn't talk about, but it was still not okay. I think it was in 1978 that Harvey Milk was the first publicly acknowledged gay person to be elected. But I may have the year wrong because I'm not sure exactly which year he was elected and which year he was assassinated, because they were very close together. But that was, and so in the 70s, there was the beginnings of some gay rights activities, but then there was the backlash with Anita Bryant. Those of you who are older probably remember Anita Bryant. And I've had one guest on my show who basically lost her children because of Anita Bryant's efforts in Florida. And if Anita Bryant hadn't been stopped in California, all that anti-gay or legislation probably would have spread throughout the country. And then, you know, in 1981, HIV and AIDS hits the picture, okay? And I really think that whether or not you grew up before or after AIDS makes a big difference on your attitudes and what you know. And that's one reason why when I was making my show, I was thinking, well, this show should really be for people who grew up, you know, who know what happened during the 80s. Because a lot of young people today are surprisingly ignorant about what things were like. And I actually have an interview in the can from a, that I haven't played yet, from a doctor who was taking care of patients in the, during the early part of the AIDS. And he reminded me about how, you know, the staff would not even go in the patient's rooms. And I mean, it was kind of like the way people are about COVID now, only you add the stigma of, oh, it's just those gay people that have that. And actually turned out, you know, the HIV is not that contagious, but people thought it was. And one reason why I think that is such an important turning point is that when people started dying, they had to start going home to their families, right? They had to come out because there was no way for them to stay in the closet any longer. They were dying. They had to go home to their families. And so I think the AIDS epidemic was a turning point for the visibility of our community, because before that, people really were like, I don't know anybody that's gay. But all these people, mostly sons, were going home to these small towns, and people were like, oh. I mean, think about the reaction to Rock Hudson. I mean, you know, that was a big deal back then. And then there were the celebrities coming out, you know, for paying for, you know, promoting AIDS research. And I mean, as bad as AIDS was, I think that its impact, the good thing that came out of it was people became aware that gay people were people. I mean, you remember the movie Philadelphia, the impact that it had. And so those are things that we as mature adults remember that, I don't know what the young guy who's I'm looking at, because he's next to you and you're still on my screen, the guy who asked the question before. For some reason, you're still on my screen. It's like I'm talking to you personally and your son or whoever he is. Or a very young boyfriend, good for you. Okay. at any rate, he doesn't remember stuff that you remember, is my point. And so the point I'm trying to make is that these events that have influenced those of us who are older make coming out different than it would be for somebody young. And that's my long-winded way of saying that. And I really think that attitudes that we learned when we're young are really hard to get rid of. I mean, like internalized homophobia, I think is a lot harder for people to overcome when they're older than it is for young people. Now, I personally didn't ever struggle with that, but I've listened to a lot of people talking about struggling with it. So I know it's a really important challenge. But coming out later in life's not all bad. I think that one of the, there are a few strengths that come with it. One is that you're already established in your career and you already have your place in your community, hopefully. Hopefully it's not just being a minister or something like that. You already have a sense of identity and you already have friendships. So you're already a person. You're not trying to figure out how to be a person and figuring out that you're gay at the same time, which I appreciate. That is the challenge of being an adolescent coming out, is that you don't even know what it means to be a person yet, and you're figuring out that you're gay. You know, I do not want to belittle the challenge of coming out when you're young. I just want to point out that it's different if you're coming out when you're older. Any other questions?
Okay. I have another one, if you don't mind.
Good, since I've been looking at you the whole time, it's really kind of weird because the thing goes to the speaker, so it's like you guys are my personal audience.
Well, I'd like to have you comment on the coming out contrast between men and women. I have a theory that women have been slower to sort of embrace coming out and have one additional challenge that particularly us white men did not have. And that is, they already as women know about difficult to prove discrimination. And so who wants to add another factor upon which you could be discriminated against not be able to prove it or do anything about it? Whereas us white men who come out, once we come to terms with it, well, we come out like little puppy dogs, you know, all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and wagging our tails and bringing on, taking on the world. And so I think it seems to me, at least, that the lesbian community has been somewhat behind that ball just because they're adding a factor for discrimination that they didn't have before, but they know about it.
Yeah, I think that's a good, you put it in a way that's a little bit different from the way I thought about it. So thank you. Yeah, because like one of the challenges I found when I did decide to come out, and I already know a lot of gay women because I used to play softball. And besides, they were just there, but my best friend in medical school, just lots of people. But a lot of them are still in the closet. I mean, it's amazing. I know couples that I know have been together for 10 years, everybody knows, and they're still pretending they're straight. You know, so that, at least in the South, hasn't gone away completely. But it makes meeting people a challenge. I mean, I can tell you that. I mean, it's not like as a woman, I'm just going to go, hey, you know, it's much harder. And my understanding, and I don't know this firsthand, but this is what I've heard, is that, traditionally, the lesbian community had very close-knit, pretty secret communities, right? And that was for protection. You know, if you were a school teacher, a very common profession for women, you know, until recently, I mean, you did not want to be out because you'd be fired. So, there's a lot of lesbian women my age that are still in the closet. So how am I going to find/meet them? It is a challenge. So I think that you've touched on something that I don't know that that's necessarily But these are people who've known that they were lesbian all along, okay? So that's a whole different thing from someone figuring it out. Now, as far as coming out later as women, there's been some good work done on this. There's some evidence of that maybe we are a little bit more, have more sex fluidity in our sexuality than men, and that it's not uncommon to, you know, so it's not like every woman who comes out has thought she was gay for 30 years and now comes out. Okay. It's much more common. I mean, those people that haven't come out, they're probably never coming out. I'm not talking to them because they've come out to themselves. And that's, I mean, that's, you know, when I'm talking about coming out later in life, I'm really talking about starting at A, saying to yourself, hey, I'm gay. Okay. So the people who have had their own little community and they've known they were gay, but they're not out publicly, that's kind of a whole different thing. And I mean, it's still the case for any of us, I think, that you're not going to necessarily just come out to every stranger you meet, right? I mean, you're a white guy and you're in a situation where you've got white guy privilege. Why should you risk it unless you have to? I mean, if I had white guy privilege, I wouldn't be going around. I have white woman privilege and I'm not necessarily going to, you know, throw that away. I mean, I live on a street of old white people and, you know, I'm out, but I'm not, you know, like, well, I do put out my flag in June, but, you know, I'm not like really, you know, loud about it. But then I realized when a neighbor stopped me to say, hey, I was talking to this person on Facebook and I think she needs to listen to you. And I was like, oh, I forgot I had already told her about that. So anyway, but one thing I have learned is, that surprised me was I thought I had the myth in my own head that, you know, women don't know because we don't know any, you know, we don't, we grow up. And even now, women still grow up thinking they're going to get married and well, maybe you won't like sex that much, but that's just the way it is. And, you know, these are your expectations. And if you're not, especially if you don't go to college, I mean, I think if you go to college, you're probably going to be exposed to it. But like, say you live in some little town and you'll never go to college. You may never even think about the possibility that you might be gay until something happens. And then I imagine, on the other hand, the guys were over there, like I said, you know, being hot for each other and stuffing it down. But it turns out that that's not really true. It turns out that there are women who've known it all along. And there are guys who, you know, when they're 70, go, you know, have something happen and realize, hey, you know, I was doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing, but now this, you know. And it's not about sex. That's the most amazing thing about it is the number of people that have written to me and come on my show who have decided that they're gay and they still haven't even had any sex with anybody the same sex. So it's not, they don't even have a partner. I mean, the other stereotype is the woman meets somebody, she falls in love with her best friend. That's the stereotype. But that's not what happens to everybody. Some people just realize, hey, you know, there's something not quite right. I got to figure out what it is. Let me see. I want to make sure I didn't leave out anything important that I wanted to share. I made a list of things that I've learned from my listeners that I wanted to share with you. And let me make sure I'm not going too over time. One, children suffer more from divorce than they do from figuring out that their parent is LGBT. That's, I already said that, but I will repeat it. The reactions that people get can be unexpected in both directions. People find the person they thought would be their ally goes off the rails. The person they expected to react poorly is supportive. That's very surprising. So support can come from unexpected places. One of the things that we constantly emphasize on the show is that you've got to give your family time to get, you know, to get their head around the information. Rick Clemens was the first person who pointed out that, you know, you've been stewing maybe for years and you finally decide to break the news. Well, the person you're telling it to hasn't been stewing about it for years and they feel blindsided. And so allowing them to have their emotions and get past them is really important. Because it's not necessarily how the person reacts right when you tell them. It's what's, you know, down the road that matters. But people do lose friends. They do have family members that they become disconnected with, and that's a reality. Early on, I interviewed a trans woman who told me that she was prepared to lose everything, her profession, everything. And she was able to rebuild, but she said when she made the decision to transition, she had to be prepared to lose everything. And some people decide losing everything is not worth it, you know, so everybody has to decide for themselves. But the other thing that I think is probably most important is don't try for people not to go it alone. And one reason why I was excited about coming to talk to your group is that I think your group can be an important resource for people in your community that are in this situation. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second. But the last thing I wanted to mention, which I said already, was that same-sex attraction is not just about sex. Because like I said, there's people who realize that they might be attracted to the same sex and they haven't had any sex yet. And most of you probably already know that, but to me, that was kind of like a surprise. So I want to say three things that I think you guys can do to help, okay? One is, you know, and I think David will probably be up for this since he's in charge of your website now, is, you know, doing some explicit outreach, you know, putting resources on your website that are welcoming to those who are coming out, because when someone is coming out as an adult, the first thing they do now is they go and look on the internet, they go and look in Amazon, they go and look for podcasts, which is where I come in. So to put out resources and make it clear that you're opening and think about, you know, who among you might be willing to be a mentor or a friend, not potential partner of someone coming out later in life. And I'd like to really emphasize that a young person can mentor an older person. The advantage of this could be that the young person, you know, has a better appreciation for what the culture is like now. Whereas the person who's coming out, you know, has stereotypes in their head, right? But they don't know what the real world is like now. So it doesn't just need to be the senior guys in your group that could do this. It could be anybody who feels that this is something that they would be willing to do. And so that's the challenge I'd like to leave you with is, you know, I know you've got more guys, more potential great Davids out in Iowa to reach. Thank you.
Thank you. Before folks.
Thank you, Ginger.
If I may, before folks ask questions, I just want to thank you personally. You're one of the resources I found and found it very comforting and helpful, and that provided connections. And then to this club's benefit, Jonathan, the man that was asking you questions, until recently was our president, and he's the founder and has a wonderful story, I think, that maybe you should consider sometime to share with others. But he was one of those mentors that met with me many times to help frame my mind, help me through the thoughts. So that was greatly appreciated.
I totally agree. And actually, Jonathan, you should consider a podcast with Ginger. I think you could have an amazing story to tell. I'm putting you on the spot, but I think that's a possibility. And David, I think you may be doing one with Ginger. Is that correct?
We recorded it. Whether she has any content worthy of posting, I don't know. It's your decision.
It's probably going to come out. It's probably going to be probably close to June, because I actually try to alternate male and female guests just so that anyone coming into the show will know that it's a show. And that's something I failed to mention, is one of the things I try to do on my show is to be a connector between all parts of the community instead of just a silo for, say, you know, lesbians coming out later in life. So I've had trans women, trans men, men, women, and I have a non-binary guest coming. So I try to sort of alternate those. And so actually I've been getting more male volunteers recently than females. So like the episode that I just dropped this morning, the poor guy, I mean, I recorded that a year ago. David, I promise you it's not going to be that long.
Well, I want to thank you, Ginger, for joining us this morning. I know you're a very busy person, and it wasn't easy, but we certainly appreciate you being here. I also want to point out, on our website, we do have a resource page that is fairly extensive and covers a wide range of areas that we hope provides information for all types of LGBTQ individuals. And we have received feedback that people have found it very useful. You're not alone in coming out in your later years. The popularity of your podcast, Growing Rainbows, supports the need for this type of research for the LGBTQ community. The trauma and complexity of coming out is different for every individual based on their sex, age, ethnicity, occupation, employer, geographic location, children, siblings, partner, marriage status, social group, you know, their friend network, and so much more. Your work shows that the age you come out significant impacts how life-changing it is. The pandemic has led me to explore podcasts in a way to learn about so many things, including information impacting the LGBTQ community. Try it and you may be hooked. And now you can post additional questions and comments or unmute your mic to avoid talking over each other. I'll try to call on people, raise your hand, and our Vice President Ryan Crane will assist. So please go ahead and continue to ask questions if there are any. Gary. Need to unmute.
There we go. Thank you so much. It was really, I've been a member of First Friday Breakfast Club, and each time in the morning as I get up, I'm going, am I going to make it? Do I really want to crawl out of bed now that I'm retired? And then I get up and I'm so glad I attend every time. And it's speakers like you that make that that getting out of bed early as a retired person beneficial. The stories that each of us have is so important. And I'm, as an older person, I'm not a user of podcasts. You've convinced me that I need to look into that more. Because the stories that each of us have is something that people need to hear. I know Rick Miller and I were both, I think, interviewed by three graduate students in the University of Iowa just recently. And I was amazed, really, that their interest, and probably, I may be wrong, Rick, but I don't think they really had a whole lot of experience with gay people, period, from from the questions and everything that was coming along. I also participate in a safe zone thing where I talk a little bit with a panel at Des Moines University. And it's the interest that people have in our stories, even how mundane we think our lives have been. Our history does count. And it's important for people to understand that and understand the differences that we all have. One of my best friends right now just came out at 70. And, he for us sharing our stories back and forth. Yeah, he's jealous of me and my young sexual exploits, and I'm, but he has children that he can support him. So each of our stories are so different, and I'll be looking forward to joining and listening to your podcast. Thank you so much.
I'd like to also encourage you to check out Making Gay History. It's an incredible podcast. He's got interviews that he did 20 years ago with people that are dead now, people that were at Stonewall, voices that we will never hear from alive again. He's got the audio recordings that he made originally for a book. It's really a great show.
We're fortunate to have Eric as our guest in January.
Oh, that's right. You already know about Making Gay History.
That's okay. That's right. Reminder's good. And
not everyone on the call knows, maybe joined us for that, but go back. I would encourage people on the call to go to our website and see the interview and look for podcast Making Gay History, because I have found that very interesting as well. Any other questions? Okay, Rick.
I just wanted to thank you also for coming, Ginger, and to let you know that I think support systems for elderly people are so very, very important. And so getting connected in different ways to the local community they're in is absolutely essential. And you are so right in so many things you said about the coming out process. And that has to do with whether you have supportive relatives that can help deal with other relatives, and the fact that coming out is an extended thing that you can't expect people to immediately embrace you, even though some may. And that I'm just really pleased with everything you're doing. And I just want to thank you for that and just make a bid for support systems and how they work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Jonathan.
I wanted to make one more comment, if you don't mind. When I came out later in life, one of the things that I got, reactions that I got was, well, you're just having a midlife crisis. And I came to the conclusion on reflection that midlife crisis has gotten a bum rap. That by the time you get to midlife, lots of times other things in your life, building a career, establishing yourself in the community, are in place. And then you start thinking, well, is that all there is? And you start looking around and have greater latitude to look around and try and figure some other stuff out, because you only have this one life to live. And when midlife crisis hits a straight person, why, they dump the wife, they buy a motorcycle, and they get a bleached blonde bimbo to put on the back, and off to Sturgis we go, kind of thing. And so I found that I had to sort of get past that. You're just going through a phase. You're just going through a midlife crisis. And I've decided, midlife crisis can be a good thing.
I agree, Jonathan. And even I know, kids that come out, their parents think, oh, it's, I've heard this so common. It's a common, oh, it's just a phase. They don't actually believe that, that their child is gay, and they'll put it off as a phase, which, isn't very supportive. Any more questions? We can start to end here. I do want to mention to everyone, hit the chat button at the bottom of your screen. There's a lot of links David Cotton put out there, like links to the past speakers and the podcast link, and there's a lot there. But if you hit chat, you will see those comments, and there's a little box at the bottom of that, a little button with three dots. If you hit that, you can save the chat, and you'll save those links before you exit. That's something I just have to learn. It's not obvious, I don't think. I do want to say we give some attention to our upcoming speakers. April 2nd, next month, we will have Chris Godfrey, who was a workers' compensation commissioner and was asked to resign with his pay cut to the legal minimum by Terry Branstad. That has been in the courts even now it is not done. He's sued for discrimination. He has won. It's gone to the Iowa Supreme Court, but it still isn't settled. May 7th will be Pete Montgomery, spokesperson for the People for the American Way, who tracks white supremacy groups and other hate groups. June 4th, I want to remind everyone that's our scholarship awards. We have not selected a speaker. I know Jonathan has some good leads. He's so good at finding speakers, but we do want to kind of have something that could be education related, hopefully, for that important meeting. July 2nd, we have Reverend Jim Conrad. He's the Town View Baptist Church in Georgia that is open and welcoming congregation and was expelled by the Southern Baptist Convention. So all of those sound very interesting. And with that, our meeting is adjourned. We will continue to keep the virtual meeting open. You can stay on the line for informal interactions if you'd like to. Hopefully that will help replicate some of the in-person meeting experience that we're lacking. So thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you again, Ginger.
Oh.